Coming up on Life is a Festival.
And I'm just thinking, like when you were talking about the burn community, this could be also a very inspiring thing for the burn community to see what is happening in the lighthouse and to say that, yes, we are creating a continuous model of living, this notion of life is a festival, but to live life as a festival, it is about honoring, respecting, and caring for life itself at every single level, for every single being on this planet, human and non-human. And I think this is, in a way, the aim of what this lighthouse is. If you are able to create a model for one of the darkest regions in the world and say, yes, we could do it here, then people can see it as a possibility that, wow, if these people, Palestinians and Israelis and Arabs, Jews, can do this model coming from the worst of the storms, we have no excuse not to create such models of peace in different parts of the world as well.
Hello, my friends and fellow travelers. My name is Eamon Armstrong. Thank you for listening to Life is a Festival, and thank you to all of you who reached out and asked for this episode. Rarely do I get so many requests for a guest or guests to return to the show, and a lot of you reached out to me to ask for Sharon and Sammy to come back. And it was a great idea. I'm so happy that we decided to do this. As you may recall, a few days after the events of October 7th, I asked Midburn co-founder and artivist Sharon Avrahim and his Palestinian theme camp co-lead, peace activist Sammy Awa, to come on the show and share their immediate experience. Now, as we all know, much has happened since then. And I was curious what was going on with these guys and how they were doing and what their perspectives are, how those perspectives might have changed in the intervening couple of months. We did their interview almost immediately after October 7th. And I'm so happy that I reached out because not only is their friendship and their resolve as strong as ever, they have an amazing peace project and we are going to talk about it on the show today. And there's opportunities for you, dear listener, to get involved and support. You know, I was so hoping to be able to offer hope, and that is what we like to do with Life as a Festival, is look for hope. However, something that Sammy says right at the beginning, which I think is important to recognize, is this symbol of a lighthouse is so hopeful, and it's something to look towards, and we mustn't forget that the storm is raging. So thank you, Sammy, for presencing that at the beginning of the conversation. So today on Life is a Festival, we have Sharon Avrahim and Sammy Awad discussing the Lighthouse Project. So we start with the role of the spiritual community amidst conflict and the impact of conflict on personal relationships. We talk about the reality of violence and hope for change in the region and the role of the festival community in peace efforts. Then we get into this ambitious Lighthouse Project, which is really a vision for peace in the Middle East taking place outside of the Middle East. That's the project. And it gets a lot of inspiration from other movements, specifically from Tamera, which actually was showcased on the last episode, which is a healing biotope in Portugal. We discuss the three pillars of the lighthouse. They have a very clear map for what they're trying to do there. And we discuss the challenges of building the lighthouse and how you, dear listener, can get involved. So, Sharon Avrahim is the co-founder of Midburn and the Fugara Art Collective, and he uses photography and installations to explore human connections. He is a passionate artist activist and has collaborated with Palestinian peace activists, documenting and bridging diverse realities. His work span from intimate portraiture to broader social narratives. Sammy Awad is the executive director of Holy Land Trust and is deeply influenced by his family's history in Palestine and teachings of nonviolent resistance. Educated in the U.S., he holds a master's degree in international relations and promotes global peace. And just a little note, actually, while we were doing the interview, Sammy got a call about the possibility of his family getting out of Gaza. And I'm happy to report that since we recorded this episode, his family is now out of Gaza and people have come forward offering donations to cover the costs of that. And so I was really excited to hear that, decided to keep it in the podcast, but we were initially thinking that we might promote a GoFundMe to support this process. It turns out that's not needed, and Sammy would prefer that all of that energy and attention go to the Lighthouse. And now we have two men I admire deeply, and I think you too will appreciate their passion, their courage, and their unending compassion. Here we have Sharon and Sammy. Sammy, you were saying that the borders to all Palestinian cities have been closed for the past 3 months?
And most of the roads are still closed going into Palestinian towns and villages. But just in the last couple of weeks, they've opened some of these side road entryways for cars to go in and out of certain cities and areas. And yeah, so the way they do it is they completely block the road with big boulders and then dirt and sand and just cover them up so nobody can move them. And people have to walk across them, carry their products, produce, their children, back and forth. People parking on these small roads, creating big traffic jams on either way. But yeah, it's good. At least they opened one of the roads to Bethlehem that people can come in and out of now.
I wanted to ask you guys before we start, I have some questions. I have some ideas about our conversation. And of course, I am your host today. So I'm not going to outsource the hosting job to the two of you. And I wanted to just kind of start before we start by touching in on the idea of conversation in this moment, because there have been so many conversations in so many corners of the world. And I'm sure that for the two of you, you have a sense of which conversations are more helpful and which conversations are not helpful. And I'm just curious, I know this is kind of a vague question and it isn't really, we're not starting the podcast yet, but I'm curious what kind of conversation the two of you would most like to have today for the Burning Man community and just in general, what kind of conversation do you want to have today?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it because Sharon's been on Zoom calls since he got here 4 hours ago, so we didn't have any time to talk about it. This busy man. One conversation that I'm interested in is one of the big issues coming up now is where is the spiritual community in the midst of all of this? And there's been a lot of discussion about the groups of people, the New Age people, the festival people that work on creating the alternative reality, alternative consciousness. How are they present to the crisis that is being faced in this land? And one thing that's for me is, and I was sharing with Sharon, like the Lighthouse is a great project. We're fully engaged in it. But something like this would fall beautifully on the ears of those people listening to it and wanting something like this, and it gives them an excuse to ignore the reality. And so for me, how do we balance a vision of holding a project, creating an alternative, creating a model, and at the same time, also finding the way to encourage people to engage? There are mass killings that are happening every day now. And for people to see the lighthouse and to see the light and ignore the storm doesn't fit. Like they need to see the lighthouse and understand that there is a violent storm happening that many people are suffering from.
Maybe this could be also from where we talk about it, right? Because the lighthouse kind of guides us out of the storm. Not that this project will end all suffering in Palestine. It's just, this is the context from where we're talking about this.
For us, it's important. Like as Palestinians and Israelis, this is important what we're doing, creating this model. But I'm talking more about to bring the reality, to talk about the reality of what's happening, not to overdo it, but to not ignore it and just focus on the lighthouse. So the lighthouse is our attempt to engage in activism when we feel living in this land, we're helpless. There's nothing we can do. And this is something that we're offering as an action, as a model.
Sammy, I'm so happy you started with this because I can tell you, even for me as the host of this conversation, when Sharon pointed me to the lighthouse, there's a part of me that's like, okay, there's something. There's something that feels like I can engage with
that feels hopeful. And it's exactly as you say, is it a way to look away from the storm? Is it a way to feel, for lack of a better word, like good about participating in some way because there's something that seems so hopeful on the horizon? And the metaphor of a lighthouse is quite interesting in that sense. It's something so hopeful on the horizon. So I love that you presence that. And what I'm hearing you saying is, let's not start with a beautiful vision as if there isn't some other stuff to talk about too. Sammy Sharon, welcome back to Life is a Festival. I really appreciate you coming back on the show. And I just want to give a shout out to all the people who messaged me asking to have the two of you back on the show. I've never had that before. I've never had a number of people reach out and be like, can you please have Sammy and Sharon back on the show to talk about where they're at now? So shout out to the people who suggested that. Great idea. It's really amazing to see the two of you, and you're in person together, which is beautiful. So it's great to see you guys. I'm really inspired by the Lighthouse Project. I'm excited to talk about it today and just to see where your loving, creative minds are working in the midst of all of this. So I'm honored to have you back.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, it's good to be back. There's a lot to talk about.
I have an interesting question that I wanted to start with. I see you, the two of you are sitting together on a couch, and we've actually shared a couple of laughs before starting this. In the past 3 months, Sammy, Sharon, has your friendship changed in any way in this really difficult time with your people in the Middle East?
I think the challenge for us has been to actually connect and see each other and be with each other as we used to. It's become much more difficult to move as Palestinians. We don't have permits anymore to travel into Israel. And for the longest time, until actually just a couple of weeks ago, the Israeli army put roadblocks on the entryway to all of the towns and villages and cities in the West Bank that prevent cars from coming in and out of these areas. And so it just became much more difficult to travel, to see each other. We try to, of course, talk and connect when we can. But I would say, to answer your question, I think it's not just the level of the friendship that is deep between us. It is also the level of the vision and the real understanding of what is happening that we align on that brings us together. And so I don't think there is much space where we actually disagree. That we could, of course, like any friendship, any relationship. But I think the commonalities, the common ground between us, the understanding of what is happening, our wish to see where we want to move from this space, I think is very strong and common between us, that keeps this friendship and this connection very stable and strong in the midst of this terrible reality that we are in.
There's a lot of energy kind of to create separation and fear, even physically. I've been here many times under all the attacks that are happening, and in this really harsh times. I remember last time I came here, we needed to jump the fence in a way, like leave our car at some point and then cross over, and Sammy came and picked us up. And with all of this energy kind of put to separate us, it's damaging the friendships. I'm happy to say that me and Sammy kind of go a while back at this point, but my relationships with many of my Palestinian friends and also other Israeli friends were sure changed in the last few months just because of being fed so much fear and being triggered to be afraid and be angry and reactive. It's definitely damaging the relationships. Mm-hmm. But we know better.
Exactly. Like what Sharon said, I've lost. And then I would even say I have intentionally also cut many relationships with Israelis during this time because of how, and again, many of them cut relationships with me as well, because there is this domination of the narrative that people fell into that pushed for violence, pushed for retaliation, pushed for revenge, pushed for killing, and that was just beyond my ability to hold such a space for many Israeli friends who, yes, we want to make peace with you, but we have to kill and we have to destroy. Like for me, it was very challenging to hear this. And then I could understand initially that rhetoric and that language, there was an emotional, there was trauma points that were triggered, historic trauma points that came out after the October 7th attack. But to see some people that still speak this language until this day, after seeing what has been happening to Gaza since then, and still justifying the war and the violence against it, coming from that place of revenge, retaliation, making them pay for what they did to us, honestly closed me from many of Israeli partners that I used to work with in the peace camp itself. And I'm sure the same on the Israeli side, where many Palestinians went into that space of now it's just about revenge, retaliation, and violence and justifying it. And for me, those who are involved in peace work need to reach a higher level of engagement. We need to have a higher consciousness, higher awareness and awakening to this reality. And this is the strength that I think Sharon and I and many others have in this community.
I resonate with it, being someone who lives in the Israeli community and grew up in the Israeli community. And it's been challenging to advocate for peace or justice these days. These days for me really pushes me to be more honest and more aligned. And something I am telling a lot of my Palestinian friends is like, listen, you demanded me to stand against my government, my people, the way they behave, the way they oppress another people. And I think due to the attacks that happened on the 7th of October, the reality that I wake up to is also to recheck with my partners. Are they willing to challenge their own community the same way that I'm challenging mine? So there's a lot of shifting, a lot that is shaking these days. And there are people who were used to walk in a certain way and advocate for a certain thing. And now it feels as everything is kind of amped to a very high intensity. It's not easy to kind of realign around that.
Guys, the last conversation that we had was on October 11th. So this was immediately in the aftermath of what happened. And Israel had not responded yet. You may not necessarily recall the details of that conversation intricately, but I think something that's kind of on people's minds a little bit who've listened to that episode is whether you would want to change your perspective from the way you were speaking then. There was a lot of shock in that conversation, a lot of fear for the future, also a lot of hope. And I'm curious if anything stands out to you from that conversation that you have a different perspective on now, or if to the best of your recollection that you feel consistent with the way that you felt on October 11th.
I'm just feeling less naive and a bit like conflicted with my own personal hopes for change and peace and an end to the occupation and this conflict. I'm really trying to hold on to this. And this time has affected me and made me a bit more pessimistic to the future of this land. I can honestly say that. But also reminded me the amount of love that I have to the people in this land. And I've seen some horrible, horrible ways people showed up, and also very beautiful ways that people showed up. I can say with all the criticism that I have towards my own people, when everything failed and my own government just stopped working and broke that agreement that the government has with its people that they need to take care of us, I am proud to see a lot of citizens just helping each other out and trying to get their communities back on their feet. I wish that would also translate to wanting the war to stop and wanting the oppression and occupation to stop. And there are many people waking up to this, but very slowly and not enough.
Yeah, I think for me, in a way very similar to Sharon. I've had my long moments and long days of absolute despair from seeing what has happened in the aftermath of October 7th. One thing very personal for me is I have family in Gaza. The entire family of my mother is in Gaza. And until this day, we're trying to see how we could help them even get out of Gaza. And it's been very, very difficult. It's been impossible to get them out. So it's very, very personal on this level, just to see their despair, their losing of hope, their pleading with me to save them, to get out. And then there's this other side where also very similar to Sharon, I think all of the masks have been put down. All of the veils are away. We are seeing the reality of the situation. This is what we have. And in a way, this reality has always been there, like love under the ground, bubbling, waiting for something to explode. And maybe we were naive in the beginning, maybe before October 7th, we were naive, and now we're more aware. And I think it's helping us develop a clear language, a clear understanding, a clear vision, in the midst of maybe even not knowing what we could do, in the midst of all of this, where many of us realize there isn't anything we could do to stop this war on Gaza that's happening. But there is this understanding, okay, this is what we have. This is what we need to start working with from now. And maybe everything that we have done in the past was more in that space of naivety, of being nice, of being cordial with each other, but not really digging in our teeth into it and addressing the real issues that we need to address. And so at that level, it gives me a little hope to say that people, like Sharon said, people who are waking up not just to an occupation that needs to end, but to an injustice that needs to end that Palestinians have been facing. Israelis talking about this has been going on for 75 years, which in the past many Israelis did not talk about. It was more about since 1967, occupation, but now more Israelis are realizing that yes, there was a Nakba, a catastrophe in 1948 that displaced many, many Palestinians and made them refugees. And so there is an awareness that is beginning to rise within circles, within the Israeli community, that these conversations did not exist before. And I think on the Palestinian side, many Palestinians are beginning to also understand the trauma and the fear and the inherited fear that exists within the Jewish community and how these triggers create such a response of this absolute destructive violence towards us, that more and more, I think more Palestinians will begin to move to understanding that nonviolence, the way we've been talking about nonviolence as resistance, as activism, is a way that is more powerful to achieve also the needs of the Palestinians. Not to say that the Israeli army will be less violent with us when we do nonviolence, but then the clarity of how the messages will happen. I also want to say that one thing as a Palestinian I would say has been very important is seeing the response of the global community. Not on the political level, of course, which has been, for me, I'm still shocked by the one-sidedness of it, at the level that it has, especially in European and North American governments. But the popular response of solidarity and standing with the Palestinians at this time has been very uplifting for many of us as Palestinians to know that we are not forgotten by normal people like us around the world, going out to protest, standing, petitioning, demanding for a ceasefire, and demanding for peace and justice in this land.
At the end of the last conversation that we had, Sharon, in these spaces, these festival spaces, you were asking that what people think of as politics, as unworthy of spaces of pure love and freedom, that you are asking that we bring these conversations into these spaces. What is your view of the festival community, the global spiritual community's response to these events? Do you think that people are waking up in this way, or have you not seen that?
A bit of a complex answer. First, I can start by saying what I see that happened here in the land. The way that the festival community showed up for the Israeli community and for the Jewish community is just amazing and inspiring. And for me, as someone who's like highly criticizing my own community for a few years now, it was very moving to see hundreds and thousands of people just show up for the kids, the survivors of the party, and opening these healing spaces, hundreds of therapists from any kind showing up for months now, volunteering to help these survivors stand back on their feet and be supported and feel like they have a whole community behind them to get them back to their lives. But after saying that, I don't see any Palestinians in these spaces. And I don't see any acknowledgement for the pain and the suffering that just even the Palestinians who are the citizens of Israel are going through these days. And because of the fear, because of the attacks, because these people went through something that's horrifying, you don't see any fragment of the Arabic language in the streets anymore. And definitely in all of this amazing, beautiful spaces that were open to support people these days, there's no room for the pain of the Palestinian people, even the citizens of Israel. It's very sad for me to see, because I have friends that are afraid to pick up the phone and speak with their mother in their native language. They're afraid to put music in their house so the neighbors wouldn't feel threatened by it. So yes, the festival community is showing up, but it's showing up clearly within a certain political camp here within Israel.
Do you want to pause for a second for Sammy to come back?
That was my cousin from Gaza.
And how is your cousin?
Good. We're having to raise money for them to get them out by paying a very, very high exit fee to the Egyptians. He's saying that they found somebody to put their name on the list to cross the Rafah crossing, and we need to send them $30,000 for five of them.
How will you be raising that money? Are there channels for raising money for this sort of thing?
Borrow it now, but we'll probably do a GoFundMe campaign or something like that to raise the money for them to leave Gaza, settle in Cairo for a bit, and then hopefully at some point send them to a country, or hopefully their wish is to go back home to Gaza. This is their home. They're not interested in migrating to a new country and starting from nothing. But we'll see. Now what's important is to get them out. So we'll see. Yeah, I'll do a GoFundMe thing for them probably in the next day or two to raise the money for them.
I don't necessarily know how the people listening would respond necessarily, but we can talk about afterwards maybe keeping this in and adding the GoFundMe into the actual podcast. I don't know how people respond, but it does seem serendipitous that in this moment we're having this conversation that is publicly recorded for the sake of people who are not in that part of the world. And then just in this moment, your cousin says, okay, we have this way out. It's going to cost this money. Okay, well, let's just put it in the podcast, see if that helps.
For sure.
Do you want to take a beat now and kind of recenter? How are you feeling just after having that call?
There's optimism, there's hope in me, but also there's this understanding that many people have been deceived on that border and paid lots of money and were tricked. There are many con artists that are working there that have stolen people's money. In Arabic we say, my hand is on my heart, just waiting. The next 2 days I'll be just waiting and breathing and just praying that everything works out and they're able to get out from Gaza. So it's tension, but also finally with some hope that we'll be able to see them on the other side. And one thing I would love to do, if I'm able to, is just to go and see them in Cairo and be with them and hold them and hug them and just thank them for making it and then surviving what many people sadly were not able to.
Well, I'm grateful to be here in this moment when you're getting this optimism, and I would love for you to let me know if you feel like it, what the outcome is that they get out. We can check in. I'd love to hear how that goes. So returning to our podcast here, we were just talking about the response of the festival community. And as you had to take the call, Sharon was sharing that he felt that in Israel, particularly with the Nova Festival attack, that there was a strong response of healing, donation of healing and that sort of thing, but that response wasn't really offered to the Palestinians. And I wanted to continue that conversation. You know, we released a podcast, what the responses have been, whether you feel that solidarity and that care, and how that leads into confidence or what degree of confidence in terms of harnessing the energy of this community for the peace efforts that we'll be talking about during the second half of the conversation.
For me, I was very pleased with the response for the podcast that you did the first time. I got so many messages from so many people, people I knew, people I don't know, that were just very touched and very moved by the conversation we had. So for me, I think what it triggers and what I hope it will continue to trigger is a new space of engagement. One thing we always say, our aim is not about being pro one side or the other. Yes, when the atrocities are happening, we need to, of course, be in solidarity with those who are oppressed in the face of the oppression. But ultimately, what are we for? What are we for? We're not for Palestinians, we're not for Israelis, we're for peace, we're for justice, we're for equality. And this is what this community for me is about. This is the core of what the festival community is about. It's about creating a new identity. This is what happens in festivals. We all melt into the oneness of each other. There is no color, there is no ethnicity, there is no religion. We become one in that space. My wish still continues to be that this community continues to grow in activism as well. We cannot keep bypassing violence that happens. And as we said before, it's not just the violence in this land. Now we are seeing a very harsh reality in this land, but violence exists everywhere. And the festival community in the U.S., what are they doing in the midst of the polarization that's happening in the U.S. as well? Is it again moving into one side, or is it a community that is able to create a sense of oneness and bring people together and engage in activism to stop violence, to stop abuse that happens? And so I think, as we said before, this is a wake-up call, and I think it's a very strong wake-up call for that community to take on, to say, yes, it is not just about us meeting once or twice a year in a closed area and enjoying life and celebrating life with each other. It is what we do throughout the year that is important. And I've seen different people from the festival community that have been posting things on their social media that are engaged in discussions about what's happening here. So there is a movement, but I wish for it to be much more. I wish for it because, for me, I trust the alternative that can be created from this community, not just to this land, but to the world itself.
Sammy, I'm going to quote you from the last episode. You said, this festival vision is, we in these spaces create an alternative. We are creating the vision of what we want the future to look like. And I think it's very imperative, very important for us to begin to really understand how do we integrate and bring these experiences of these festivals into our daily lives. And when I listened back to the podcast that we did, that struck out. How do we bring this oneness into our daily lives? And when you shared with me the Lighthouse Project, it seems like that is a beacon to draw those of us who want to bring this change into our daily lives. The vision of the space is an ongoing year-round space. These festivals are an alternative vision of the future, but in a sense, it's not enough to have a vision. We've seen the alternative. We've been there. We've explored it. And many of us have been enriched by it. I've been enriched by that alternative vision. But I think that it's time to move beyond vision in many senses. And I think there are different communities who have been doing that. The Lighthouse Project is a big step that is doing exactly that. So just right out the gate, tell me a little bit about the history of activism that led
to the Lighthouse Project. I understand that these are threads that have been ongoing for a long time in peace movements.
The reality that we live in is that we have been living in a reality of violence, occupation, oppression, terror for many years. If people think that it started October 7th, they are deeply, deeply mistaken. Nothing just started from nothing on October 7th. There is a history that we all have been living and part of. And that history, many of us have been very active in the resistance, in nonviolent resistance, in dialogue and peacemaking, in many, many aspects of trying to bring that violence to an end. And within that reality of resistance, there has also been a movement of what asking the question, what are we fighting for? What are we resisting for? And there was a clear vision that we're not resisting for us to be separated from each other. We're not resistance to create boundaries and borders that are based on fear from each other. We are resistance to create oneness, to come together as people who live in the Holy Land, Palestinians, Israelis, Jews, Christians, and Muslims. We actually have a history of living together, of being friends with each other. This is our reality as well. This is part of our history that many people do not talk about. And so inspired by different models of communities from around the world where peace communities that bring people together in a very intentional way to create a model of what a nonviolent community looks like socially, politically, economically, ecologically. How do we create peace at all levels of our being? Not just achieving a political treaty between Palestinians and Israelis that are, again, based on separation and fear of each other and security and arms. And inspired by these communities for many, many years now, groups of people have come together to explore creating a model of a community where Palestinians and Israelis actually live together, to create a model of a reality that people can look at and say, wow, it can happen, actually. It can happen where these people can create peace with each other. Again, peace in the oneness of coming together and not in separating from each other. And for many years, there have been explorations. There have been even successful attempts at creating such spaces where Palestinians and Israelis came together, lived together, created projects together, brought people for healing together, brought people for training and peacemaking together. And all of this sort of has been the seeds that were planted to the vision of the Lighthouse idea that has emerged 4 or 5 years ago. Like, so it's bringing a lot of energies. Just and Sharon, for me, I honor him and respect him for actually initiating and saying, yes, let us do it. Because part of it was, for the longest time, is asking the question, where do we create such a space? And there was a wish and desire to create this space in this land, which kind of makes sense, but to also understand that it is very, very, very difficult to bring Palestinians and Israelis to live together in this land. It's just impossible. Just like we said earlier, it's very difficult to even visit each other, let alone create a space. And then Sharon came up with this initiative to say, yes, maybe we could do this, and we could do this also outside of this land and create that model of a peace community, a peace village. One of the communities that we were deeply inspired by is a community in Portugal called Tamera, which is a peace research village that really went deep for the last almost 50 years in asking the question, what do we need to address within our human capacity and our being to create a model community that addresses, again, all of the violence and create the most nonviolent community that we could have. And there were Palestinians and Israelis that went to Tamera, learned from Tamera. Some of them still live in Tamera, actually, till this day, that are an inspiration to us.
Fun bit of serendipity on this one. The episode that is coming out right before this episode is a repost of an episode that I did about Tamera, because Ian McKenzie's film is coming out. And so he was like, let's bring back that podcast. So we're actually, right before this is a Tamera podcast. So you, dear listener, the community that we're talking about right now is actually, you could just listen to the last episode and we get all into love without fear. How can we be regenerative in this way? And I saw Sabine in one of the photos on the website and I was like, oh man, that's all weaving together. So there's some magical synergies at the moment.
So from Tamera, a project was created called the Peace Research Village, the PRV, where Palestinians and Israelis engage together in a very, very deep process to learn together. Because you can't just come together and say, let's create community. There's a whole process. There's a whole shift in consciousness and energy that needs to come together to create a community. There's what you let go of, what you build together. How do you address the issues like what Tamir addresses, love and sexuality, power dynamics, money issues within community? All of these are very, very important for community to be built and to sustain itself. So it's not just a nice fluffy idea, let's all come together and build community. It's a very, very deep process to engage in it. And then as an outcome of this, there was actually a model of a community that was created called ECOME, which was a small sort of community that was created in the Jericho area, where Palestinians and Israelis created a real community together, lived together, and created that space where people came, engaged, learned together, met with each other, sharing, talking, building friendships and relationships with each other. So it was like a center that invited different conversations to take place in it. And then so the lighthouse is sort of the next step in that journey that has been going on for a few decades now.
In this moment, as we continue to speak about the lighthouse, I'd love to hear about some of the other folks that are involved, because there's a number of people that are involved in a bunch of really cool projects themselves, all kind of converging on this. So do we want to give a shout out to some of the collaborators?
He was the Nobel Prize nominee, Suleiman Khatib.
Do you have a Nobel Prize nominee sleeping on your couch that you are waking up right now? Hi.
Shout out.
Sule is one of the Palestinian leaders in this movement. The key leader in the movement itself. He's taking a rest.
It's pretty sweet that in this moment you can move the camera and he's actually just sleeping on the couch at the moment.
Cool. In a way, this house here in Bethlehem is a community house. There's always people coming, resting, meeting, talking, connecting with each other. So for me, it's part of creating the space for people to be together as community.
Yeah. The thing is, the community is alive, the group is alive, the people who are holding this vision, they're out there, right? We have partners in Cairo, in Amman, in Beirut, in San Francisco, in Berlin, in Lisbon, in all kinds of places around the region. Our biggest obstacle is the lack of ability we have to do the work that we want to do in the world that we know is needed. That there's no one safe space to do that. So a lot of the work is being done by people from this group in their respective communities. Very beautiful work that's being done. But then the need for us to really co-create and cross-pollinate each other is dire these days to actually create an alternative to the culture of separation that's happening in this region.
So I want to talk a little bit about the kind of roadmap for this project. There are three main pillars here. Artivism, which Sharon, I know is something that you are a very big fan of and have worked tirelessly as an artivist. And I've seen your work and it's very beautiful and evocative. Also regeneration, the sustainability piece and the idea that desertification and climate change is a huge part of instability and that actually environmental regeneration is key. And then social entrepreneurship as well. These are the three program areas. I think sometimes people look at a project and they're like, okay, this is great vision, but what are you actually doing here? And I love that at this stage of visioning that it's quite tangible what this space is for. So would you mind sharing a little bit about these different programs and ideas?
In order for a place like this to be successful, the processes the people are going through. It needs to give them tools and build capacity for either a real change that can happen around the people that are coming to the lighthouse, or very viable tools that they can receive when they go back to their communities. So I think there's a few aspects that the lighthouse wants to benefit the people that are going to go through him. So first of all, well, climate change is real. And in this region, we are seeing the results of it for more than a decade right now. The war, like the war in Syria, and the millions of refugees from the different conflicts in the region that are leaving, and most of them are leaving to Europe. The transition between the life over here to a new life in a new culture, that's something that's very difficult for many people. And for us to be able to take these people in, provide a landing pad for them with people from their own culture that speak their own language, and train them in tools that are relevant for the new society that they're stepping into. So these days, we can teach these people in the different fields, basically, new tools that they can use for their new lives. So maybe let's take it field by field. Yeah, I can start speaking about artivism and continue from there. I think one of the ways that we can really affect people and affect the common narrative is through art. Basically, art has a way to affect people and to get to people in a way that normal advocacy usually doesn't touch them in the same way. For us, you know, there's many ways to resist. You can demonstrate, you can go and speak to the public, and you can recreate the reality that you want to see in a way that really talks to people. So either for us to create these festival spaces, for example, for us to create the festival space that calls in art that is connected to what's happening in the world. To get people to create, to engage, to experiment with art that talks about the pain that they have from their own realities, from their own communities. To recreate very political images through a space that is expressive, that people can come and experience it. These are very, very strong tools that they can use to affect people. For example, if you create like a burn space that uses this culture and these experiences that you usually go to a festival and you touch like fantasy elements and themes, you actually come and experience a reality. Let's say me and Sami, for example, we bring what's happening in Gaza today into a festival space. Let's say we recreate a house in Gaza that's going to be bombed as an art installation, where people get to really experience how it feels to be a person that his house is falling down on him. How does it make them feel suddenly when they go out to the streets and they see these people with Free Palestine signs? Suddenly there's a different reaction that is triggered in them. Suddenly they somatically felt in their own bodies how it might feel to be in a situation like this. And this is something that not everyone has the tools to understand how to use their own expression as a tool for change. This is something that you need time and space and safety and guidance to learn how to harness these tools in order to either inspire the people around you and empower them, or introduce a new perspective to other people. So in the lighthouse, you'll have a safe space that allows people to experiment, to learn from other people and from professionals in the fields, how to use their causes and their own expression to really create a strong message that can be broadcast outwards.
The artivism piece makes a lot of sense. And I like that there's ideas here for an artist residency, workshops and mentorships. And one of the things I just want to flag around the Lighthouse in this moment, which we've kind of alluded to, but just to explicitly say it, that the Lighthouse is a vision of a space, but it is already an existing community. It's already existing threads coming together. And so what I think is really interesting here is the artist mentorship stuff and like how to bring people as well into spaces of not understanding themselves as artists, but understanding that they have a message and that maybe there are these mediums that could be messages for them. I think that's super cool. And then the second piece that we were talking about in this list here is the regeneration piece. And this includes practical sustainability and regeneration courses. That's a 4-week long offering and full-on semester-long environmental education. Obviously, as we've just spoken about, the nature of climate change and desertification is huge, but also permaculture as a philosophical perspective or applying environmental concepts and biomimicry to healing social and political ills is a tried and true approach of obtaining knowledge. And it's really inspiring. So I love the fact that that's a key pillar here. So do you want to share a bit about the regeneration program?
This field is more led by Rina Kedem, who's our partner, together with the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies. That's an institute that's established in the southern desert, the part of Israel, that for many, many years, connecting Israel, Palestine, Egypt, and Jordan through environmental programs, and basically through the notion that we have shared interests because we're actually sharing the same geography. And the more collaboration we have around the subject, the more we learn how to work together. While saying that, I can say that in our kind of ever-changing world and the climate being a bigger issue, we need to learn from nature and we need to learn tools that help us harness nature in a regenerative way that is not destructive. It sounds small, but learning permaculture and the values of permaculture, specifically for people who don't come from these fields, it's empowering and it teaches us how to nourish nature and get nourished from it, how to steward the land, how to grow things, how to take care of them in a world that food scarcity is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. You can, in relatively short time, give people tools that they could be contributing members in any community, in any society, any culture they go through. And specifically people coming from the desert areas of the Middle East and dealing with these issues over here and learning how to overcome these issues over here. Then stepping up to a place like Portugal, Northern Europe, you're actually coming with a very strong set of skill because over here we're kind of a little bit ahead of time with the global warming situation that's happening in the world.
And that dovetails really well into this third pillar, which is the social entrepreneurship. And we spoke about that a little bit in the beginning around the empowerment of allowing people to create business, to create their own ability to generate and multiply through the skills that they can learn there, including, as you've mentioned on the website, your emergency skills, which seem to be tragically more and more necessary. Do you want to speak a little bit about the social entrepreneur pillar of the program?
Yeah, I mean, it's entrepreneurship in many things. One thing that I think is very core of the Lighthouse is to create a space outside of the region where people can breathe, learn, develop, create, be creative. Because this region is a region, not just in this land, but all over where people are put under continuous pressure. Creativity is limited.
entrepreneurship is limited. We live in structures where tribal systems dominate, where political party systems dominate, and you gain by affiliation, not by your own creativity and vision. And then we have many visionaries, many amazing young people in this area, the whole Middle East region, that just need an opportunity, need space to learn, to engage, to develop, to be mentored, to receive guidance in how they could also grow, and not just for personal gain, to grow in serving their communities, serving their nations, serving their people. Our aim ultimately is not just to bring the sense of democracy and freedom and life to this region or of Palestinians and Israelis live. We see the whole crescent, this whole area of the Middle East actually emerging in a new reality that we want to play a part of, where there is freedom of expression, there is freedom of assembly, there is freedom of the press, there is freedom to be creative, to grow in the whole region as a whole. And so we want to invite people who have the wish and capacity and desire to grow in these skills to come and learn with us and be with us. A place where people can deal with burnout from where they come from as activists is also very important for us. We saw from the Arab Spring era the potential of when young people come together and say, we are done with authoritarian systems, with dictators. They create change, but they were so burned out that they couldn't even lead to what comes after. They toppled down the dictators, and so new systems of authoritarianism emerged. We want to be able to address these issues. How do we create a revolution in your community, a peaceful revolution, and also create a vision of what that country and that nation looks like after? And so the joy for me is that this is a place, it is a location, a continuous location that is both a model of what can be created and a learning center for people to come and learn, experience, heal, recuperate, and go back into their area. And a part of it for us is that we create the space, but we are from here. We will continue to engage here. We will continue to be active here. This is not escapism. This is not creating a bypass or an alternative just to be out of this place. We love this land. We love the people in this land, as Sharon said. And I think it's very important for people who are activists in such a stressful reality to have time to breathe, to heal, to learn new skills and learn new tools and be able to come back to serve their communities and to serve ending violence and bringing peace to their nations.
I think the main question is, how do you provide agency? How do you nurture agency in these people? When you live under oppression, your most basic feeling of safety is being taken from you. And these are not a fertile ground for an entrepreneur to rise. And then when you get the chance to go to a safe place, when you can feel the safety and you can start filling these springs of inspiration slowly flowing from you.
And you connect with like-minded people that you can't meet.
Exactly.
In the country that you come from.
And this is the thing, like working in this field, many times you don't experience success. Why? Because you're fighting such a big system. And in the lighthouse, you can experiment and you can create a greenhouse for people to dream in a certain capacity and experience success around that and learn how to take an idea and make it happen in real life in a relative short time and do it with like-minded people. And then you can say, oh, I can actually build something. I can actually achieve something. And this is true for entrepreneurship, and this is true for first aid skills. Like, I'm a medic. So I've learned how to take care of the people around me, and this creates agency. This makes me useful wherever I go. Taking care of people, I don't need to learn their language for it. This is universal. We're all human. We all have the same blood. And giving people these tools just creates more agency in them, give them more confidence to carry that onwards in their journey.
Sammy, I love what you said about this isn't escapism. I'm from the Burning Man community. We make camps, we make communities, and periodically we have ideas of making big land-based intentional community projects. A lot of times these are utopian visions of escape. We want to live the way we want to live. The way we're going to do that is we're going to get away, find some place, and probably inconvenience the people who are already living there. And, you know, that's our spot to do our thing. And that's the escapist fantasy. And I'm glad this is not that. This is very much tied to creating that gets brought back. This is a learning center. It isn't an escapist community. That being said, I think it seems like it would probably run up against some of the other challenges of intentional communities, which, as we mentioned earlier, Tamara did a great job of prototyping how to deal with certain relational challenges of building community. So I know that y'all are both deeply steeped in some of the different ways of dealing with some of the challenges. There's good models that you've looked at, like Tamara, for example. What are the biggest challenges to actually getting the lighthouse off the ground?
I want to start by saying that one of the beautiful things we have is access. We have access to all these models. We have support from communities like Tamara and others that are ready to support us and help us and create space for us to be trained with them and by them to help us deal with many of the issues that will arise within any community that is created anywhere, dealing with any of the struggles and the challenges, decision-making, power dynamics, relational issues, money issues, all of these things. We are lucky to say that there is a support mechanism that we have for us. I think one of the challenges that we will face is the reality that we all come from traumatized and traumatizing and violent backgrounds, that all of the people that we'll meet there, we need to be on our healing path as well. And we need to understand that there is work that we need to do in addressing our history of where we come from, and how we bring that history into these spaces. How do we bring this issues of privilege and power dynamics into a space and deeply listen to each other, deeply open our hearts to each other, deeply step back and allow for those who have not had voice to have their voice being heard, to have power to speak their truth, not to be threatened by whatever truth is being said that might be perceived as hurting. So I think it's going to be a very deep and I would say very welcoming process, because for us, again, the point is to create this as an experiment, as an exploration that we could also bring into different areas, to bring it into this region as a whole. I think this is one of the big challenges. There is also challenges in when you create a space like this in a European country, the ability for people to access that location. For Israelis, for example, it's much easier and even financially feasible to travel to Portugal, to Spain from Tel Aviv. For Palestinians, the visa process is not easy. It's very difficult. It's not always accepted, and the cost is much higher for to do this. And it's Palestinians, it could be Jordanians, Egyptians. And so there is the dynamic of how do you address that level of also accessibility and privilege that some people will be able to and some people will not be able to. And then what do we do in a situation like this? How do we stand together in solidarity in a situation like this? Not to say we cancel everything, but also not to say we ignore this component of injustice that is also existence, and just by how I identify myself gives me access to something and not. Of course, there's the big issue of the financial issue of the lighthouse itself. There is the cost. This is land. This is construction. This is location. This is buildings. This is spaces. This is retreat centers that we need to find and create or build over there. And Sharon has been on several trips to Portugal, looking at different locations and different sites where the lighthouse can also exist. And maybe he could talk about it more. So there are many, many steps that we need to take for this to happen, for sure.
I think the main struggle is to actually create an inclusive environment. And inclusive, it doesn't mean that everyone's invited. It's how do you balance people that are coming from different regions, from different privileges, and succeed to put all the voices on the table without getting the people that has more confidence, more power, more experience or connections or finances to actually make the decisions? Because then you're not creating anything different from the place over here. Like, how do you move forward and achieve such a huge goal with advancing in the pace that makes it inclusive for everyone? And that's a challenge, I can say. As an Israeli who grew up in the startup nation, I'm like, what the fuck? Why are we still talking about it 5 years since we started? Whereas we could have been there already. But then if the Israelis in the group would have run forward with our access, our capital, our experience, we'll just end up creating the same thing that's happening over here. So how do we advance in the pace of the slowest person in the group, maybe, but then they might be slow in this like capitalist aspect, but actually have a lot of wisdom to add to this project. And as I see, the more time we take and the more thought and love that we put into slowly building this project group, the wider it gets, the more women this project have in leadership. We get to more people from different countries in the region. Like Adrienne Marie Brown says a lot, and like, when the system is ready, this can emerge. This is not a strategy that you plan on Excel sheets. Believe me, I tried. This is an ecosystem that you nourish until it's ready to emerge and actually create the space.
Well, and with that perspective, I think the metaphor of a lighthouse is so apt. Keep your eye on the lighthouse. Just keep your eye on it. And as we were saying just at the very beginning of this whole conversation, is don't forget the storm. The storm is raging. The storm is real. And at the same time, in a certain sense, so is the lighthouse, although it is not yet a physical space, that there is something to look towards. And for me, when we were coming into this conversation, as someone who is not in that region, who has friends who are there, but I'm not particularly involved in that part of the world, and I want to be helpful. And with everything that's gone on over the past 3 months, I've listened to so many podcasts and I've had so many conversations, and there's been this kind of feeling of, you know, a lot of helplessness. I think the thing about the lighthouse that is so inspiring is that in the way you're describing cultivating this ecosystem, anyone who has the will can potentially plug in and can potentially offer energy to this vision, whether that's energy through resources or whether that's energy through wanting to collaborate, that it's open source in that way. It's an aspirational space out the gate. And for those of us who've felt very overwhelmed by just the enormity of the world's grief and this particular grief, the idea of a lighthouse is quite an encouraging vision.
And I'm just thinking, like, when you were talking about the burn community, this could be also a very inspiring thing for the burn community to see what is happening in the lighthouse and to say that, yes, we are creating a continuous model of living. This notion of life is a festival, but to live life as a festival, it is about honoring, respecting, and caring for life itself at every single level, for every single being on this planet, human and non-human. And I think this is, in a way, the aim of what this lighthouse is. We want to create a model that, if you are able to create a model for one of the darkest regions in the world and say, yes, we could do it here, then people can see it as a possibility that, wow, if these people, if Palestinians and Israelis and Arabs, Jews can do this model coming from the worst of the storms, then this can be something that we could do as well in our region. We have no excuse not to create such models of peace in different parts of the world as well.
I love that. And I love that you two are working on this, because I'm very inspired by both of you and the way you're both able to articulate this vision. And I have no doubt that all of your collaborators are on par with your eloquence, or at least close to on par with your eloquence. We're coming to the end of our conversation today. Is there anything else about this project that we missed that we want to mention to the listeners?
No, I think what I want to add is we need support. We need people that are ready to back up this project, to trust, to believe in it. And as we said before, to believe in it, not as a way of saying, I'm doing my little thing and supporting, and then I don't see everything else. This is a way of engaging. Supporting the lighthouse is a pathway to also addressing the storm that is happening. And we need those people. We need those strong people, willing people to say, this is our way of supporting activists in bringing peace and justice and equality to the region where they came from. This is a way where we can support a transformation and healing that can happen in this region as well. And so my wish is, as listeners listen to this, they really begin to look into how they can engage in supporting this project.
And just to really put a fine point on that, at this stage, what is the best way to plug in? I imagine email list, getting on the website. If someone's like, yes, this is where I want to put my energy, what's the best way to connect?
Go into the website, read about the lighthouse, and leave us a comment. These are the easiest way to reach us. I can say that for me, the seed that was planted in me to learn that I can create the reality I want to see in this world was planted at Burning Man. I arrived to Burning Man the first time when I was 21, fresh out of the military, still drinking the Kool-Aid, still very much within the Israeli Zionist narrative. And this was the first time that I learned to ask big questions, to bring myself fully, to do big projects. And this is where I grew up. I grew up as an adult within the Burning Man community. And I am very curious to harness everything I've learned there and the beautiful community that I've built from the Burn community to examine and research together what's the future of this culture. Are we destined to party our ass off in the desert, far away from everything? Or did we learn tools over there that can actually benefit the community around us, ourselves, and the world in the knowledge that we've gained there of how to work together in big groups and how to co-create a culture that really is global and can affect a lot of people? And what does it mean to take this community and all the lessons we learned and actually try to tackle something very dark that's happening these days and try to shed some light over there?
Sammy, Sharon, it's really great to see the two of you. And even in these dark times, it is really nice to laugh a little bit with you both and smile a little bit in the context of this conversation. I know that these are not laughing or smiling times, and yet I think that's part of the zest of creativity. When there's a vision, when there's something to put our human ingenuity towards that feels like momentum, it does bring joy even in times like this. And it is a real honor to share some joy with the two of you in these moments. And I'm super pumped about the lighthouse. I think it's great. I think you guys just really nailed it on on this idea. And so I hope that the listeners and the broader Burning Man community really takes a good look at this as a way to put the energy that says, hey, look, I do not want these horrible things happening in the world, and I want to do something. I think that this is a really beautiful example of doing something that really resonates with the type of people who know what to do when shit hits the fan in a dust storm and somebody's yurt's flying away. We know how to deal with disasters. You're trained as a medic, Sharon. We like being called to these kinds of challenges, and this is one of the biggest geopolitical challenge in the world. So let us rise to the challenge. So I call my fellow burners to engage and participate, and we'll keep our eye on the lighthouse while continuing to know that the storm is also raging.
Thank you so much, brother, for checking in with us and for supporting this journey.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you like the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor.